Live from your ex-fiancé's apartment, it's the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour. 30 minutes of no-holds-barred discussion about the exciting and dangerous world of professional alligator wrestling. With your host, the eldest of the Ringhausen Brothers, author, songwriter, a silky smooth attorney, the first banjoist for the New York Philharmonic, and the legal representative of the International Brotherhood of Professional Alligator Wrestlers, a kind-hearted soul, if ever there was one, Richard J. Ringhausen. Also featuring, who are you, quivering with anticipation? Sculptor, marksman, weasel, seven-time world welterweight alligator wrestling champ, winner of the silver medal in alligator wrestling at the 1992 Summer Olympics in Barcelona, Spain. A man with an iron jaw who once caught a bullet in his teeth. You've got it. The youngest of the Ringhausen Brothers. And the star of your show, Alan J. Ringhausen. A man who once caught a bullet in his teeth.
You know, they had that on some TV show. Was it That's Incredible, where the guy had like a steel cup like thing that he held in his teeth and let somebody shoot a bullet into that little cup that he was holding in his mouth. You remember that?
It was a giant. That's a giant scam. I mean, it's like a fake magic trick, isn't it?
No, I don't think so.
You think someone literally caught a bullet in their teeth inside of a little metal cup, huh?
Okay, don't you think that we could talk Larry Clunk into putting a metal cup in his mouth and we'll shoot a BB into it with a BB gun?
I was just thinking that.
He could handle that, couldn't he?
I think he could, you know. And we'd put like some Play-Doh or something packed in the bottom of it so that it would actually catch the BB. It wouldn't just ricochet out so that we'd know that it went in there.
To prove it. So you can prove it.
Now, the question is, which one of us is, how far away are you going to be? Which one of us is a good enough shot to do that? You know, if you're going to stand, you know, just,
Rick,
if you're going to stand where the barrel is just barely touching the Play-Doh, you know, there's no point to it. Of course,
the only way to decide that, Rick, is for all three of us to shoot at the same time.
And there'd be three BBs in that Play-Doh in Larry's
mouth.
That's
right. Embedded in the Play-Doh
or
his eye.
And here's the thing. Once you caught a BB...
Okay, don't do this at home, kids. We're
no,
just joking.
Kid, don't do this at home.
Maybe.
But once you caught a BB in your mouth, the next logical step would be try it with a pellet gun, right?
Yep.
And then just
work your way up.
Your way up to live ammo.
It's a 357 Magnum.
You know that he's got like the bullets tucked under his tongue and just whips it out whenever they pretend to shoot it. I mean, he catches it with his iron jaw.
Don't give away secrets like that. Don't give away secrets like that. Yeah, hey, no. You know, in the intro this time, Rick, you left something out, right? Well, I want to have this added next show.
Yeah.
I want you to say that. I also want you to say that I'm a diesel mechanic.
A diesel mechanic? Have we ever had a diesel-powered vehicle on the farm?
No.
Oh, yeah. I take that
it
back.
It just sounds cool.
I know it does, but now that I've said that, we did have a diesel-powered tractor. It was an old Alice Chalmers.
XT-190.
Yeah, the XT-190 was diesel-powered, and we had like a diesel tank down at camps back in the day, and you'd literally have to pump it with a pump to put that diesel in that tractor. That's my recollection.
Yeah. Okay, let me ask you something. You know, I was at this conference here recently, and somebody was asking me about operating a gas station, and I did for several years operated a gas station, and it was no fun. But nowadays, when you go to a gas station, you got to get out and you got to pump your own gas or diesel or whatever, and anything else you want done, you got to do it yourself.
Yeah.
If there was a full service gas station in your neighborhood, would you pay an extra 5 cents a gallon? Have somebody run out, pump your gas, clean your windshield, check the air in your tires.
And they check the oil if you ask them to, right?
And check the oil.
Yeah, I would. I would pony up for that. Full service gas station.
Why?
Your children.
Why isn't there
someone doing that? That's a good question.
I think we need that. Why don't we have that?
Like the Gulf.
I'm going to look it up.
The old Gulf commercials, they'd drive up to the gas station and like four or five guys would run out. One of them would check the air in the tires and one of them check the oil and the other one's pumping gas and the other one's cleaning the windows, right?
What was the gas station where the guy pulls up and the attendant steps out the door, smiles, and like his teeth sparkle? And then he does like a set of flips on his way over to the car.
Yeah, I remember that too now that you've said
that. You remember
that? Yeah, like Texaco, I think. Like the Texaco man would step out like that and do the flips over. I think
it's like in a white suit, you know, white attendant suit, smiles, his teeth sparkle, and he just flips on the way over to your car.
Yeah, and
that's what I want.
They'd have little white caps too, you know. Like those two guys in It's a Mad, Mad, Mad World that ran that gas station. You remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I was thinking more of Steve Martin in The Jerk.
Okay, yeah, that too.
Let's check the oil. Let's do it together.
What I remember about those old type of gas stations, though, is that they would have like a, they'd have a cable that ran out across the driveway of it that when a car drove
ding,
up,
ding.
It would ring a compression bell inside of it. And my recollection is that whenever I'd go like to get a tire or something fixed, you know, and you're hanging around doing nothing, it was all I could do to not just go over and stomp that thing over and over and over and over.
Right, and it took a pretty hard stomp to make it ring.
Yeah, but you did that, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, I did.
Of course.
Everybody did it.
And the guys that work there, of course, they're just the same age as us, you know. Only instead of getting a job in an orchard, they got a job in a gas station. And they could just kill you for doing something like that. They're so sick of hearing that bell ring.
Mainly they were sick of you.
Well, mainly. Of course.
Anyway,
go ahead.
I'm making a push to have the full-service gas station come.
I would love that.
And it's long overdue.
I think so. You have a topic today, is that right?
All right. Well, eventually.
Okay, you got something else. Go on.
Eventually, you know, one of the things I got to thinking about, you know, is here in the United States, our president announced that he was making English the official language of our country.
Isn't it already?
And, yeah, it is. But that's when I got to thinking that every country should speak English, you know, just to make it easier on me. Or we should have, it doesn't have to be English, it could be some language that is the
probably end up being Chinese
world language, a common language that everybody understands. Doesn't matter if you're from Zambia, it doesn't matter if you're from Australia, or it doesn't matter if you're from Ecuador, it doesn't matter wherever you're from, you could, you know, if you're, you know, traveling around the world, you can use the international language.
It's called Esperanto.
Which is, the international language, Rick, is love.
I'm telling you, there's an international language that they cooked up that's a totally independent language. It's called Esperanto.
It doesn't work. You're the only person who knows about it.
Well, I speak it all the time, but nobody seems to understand what I'm saying.
You must have been the last person to take that class. So now you're the last living person that knows about it. Okay. So then I got to thinking, are there any words that are, you know, accepted around the world? And I came across the most common word on the planet.
No.
Do you know what it is?
No.
It is not no. It's huh?
That's my son's favorite word.
Huh?
Huh? You mean everyone on Earth can understand if you say, huh?
Uh-huh.
Well, I think uh-huh goes pretty far, too.
Huh?
Uh-huh.
What are you saying? Huh?
Huh? Uh-huh.
I can't understand your language. Huh?
I
understand that.
Whenever you go to a foreign country and they speak a different language, the secret to it is that when you just speak English, speak it slower.
Slower and louder.
Slower and louder.
No! No, I don't want any fish.
I think English is pretty close to being the world language. I think the scientific community pretty much uses English, I believe. And I'm pretty sure that the financial world runs on English also.
Okay.
That there's a lot more Chinese people in China that know English than there are American people in America that know Chinese.
Yeah, but the people in America that know Chinese are, there's only like five of them, isn't there?
That's four more than no Esperanto.
All right. Okay, let's see. I had a subject, right?
Yeah, you
okay,
said so.
But wait, before we get to the subject.
Yeah.
Another thing that you don't hear much about anymore.
All right, what?
That you used to, you know, like your kids, every so often you hear about this, but now you never hear about people losing a limb in machinery.
No, that was a...
When was the last time you heard somebody losing a you know, like an arm or a foot or even a couple of fingers in a piece of machinery?
That used to be a real thing, man. There are guys...
That was a real thing, yeah.
There are guys that I know that have lost limbs in machinery. But I think that there's
right.
I think there's a lot more safety guards on things than there used to be.
Like I think there's that, and you just don't go stomping into a piece of equipment that's clogged up.
No, I think they have things to stop you from doing that.
Do you think it's because the equipment is better, the safety equipment is better, or because there were so many people that lost limbs that then people now say, why don't you do it? I can lose a limb.
I think it was a lot of the second. I don't believe that people are a whole lot smarter today than they ever used to be. I just think that they've seen the results of what happens when you do crazy things like that. Of course, there are people that okay. will remove the safety gear and shields and stuff from machinery.
Oh, yeah. If you want it to run right, you will.
Yeah.
Kids
don't do that. Don't take the shields off the power takeoff shafts of the lawn of the orchard mower. Leave them
okay,
on.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to ask you about: did you look up the video on the little monkey that walks on stilts?
Monkey that
did
walks
you
on
stilts. Look at that.
The monkey that walks on stilts is amazing. He's an amazing monkey.
You need to do that. You look up on YouTube.
I did.
Monkey on stilts.
That's all you got to do, people. That's your thing. Okay, before you get into the topic, I got a commercial. All right?
Okay, yeah, sure.
All right. How many times, Alan, have you found yourself sitting on the sofa, watching TV and eating chips with your pet dog sitting vigilantly at your feet? You know how this plays out. You end up sharing your chips with Fido. The same for your popcorn, Cheetos, and Fritos. The dog always gets his share. But what about when you break out the dog biscuits? Does the door swing the other way? Does Rover share with you? Of course not. Those dog biscuits are his personal property. Well, those days are over. Thanks to Uncle Den, you can now buy dog biscuits that are specially flavored so that they are just as tasty to humans as they are to dogs. Uncle Den has produced a line of dog biscuits that taste like chocolate brownies. Of course, chocolate is poisonous to dogs, so there's no chocolate actually in these dog biscuits, but your taste buds won't know the difference. Get yours today. Uncle Den's Chocolate Brownie Dog Biscuits. What's fair is fair.
Do you remember when we had that, the original Herman Basset Hound?
Yeah.
And it was like the first dog we ever let in the house.
Yeah, we would
come
dog,
in. And it
the
had,
dog, dogs at
it
the farm
like
always lived outside.
Chair that it sat in.
Yeah. Yeah, he moved in. He became part
remember,
of the family.
Do you remember Dad would sit in like the recliner in front of the TV and he'd have a bag of chips. He'd be eating these chips and that dog was just studying him just intensely. And Dad would never look at it. But every so often he'd just flip this chip off to the right without looking, and the dog would catch it in his mouth every time.
I don't remember that. See, I think I went away to law school and missed some of that action.
Yeah, but I just like burned into my brain. You know? Like Dad would never look at the dog. They just throw a chip over to it every so often, and the dog never missed it.
You know what kind of person
it lived?
What kind of
for
person
that occasional would, chip
would never give a chip to the dog that's sitting there?
Well, you gotta do it.
I mean. That Caesar,
they love you.
That Caesar Milano guy, right, that does dog training, he says that you should never give a dog people food. As soon as you give a dog people food, that it wants it every time you eat. But if you never give it to them, then they're satisfied with dog food and they don't beg at the table.
Yeah, whatever. This dog's dead. It's not telling other dogs about it.
And
let go, Rick.
I say, what kind of human can sit and eat bag of potato chips and not give the dog one? I mean, he's sitting there. He knows that chips are salty and delicious. He's just dying for one. You're not going to give him a chip?
I'm eating all these chips, Herman, because it's good for you that you don't get any.
You know, we went to...
Understand?
The wife and I went to a thing today called a Doxy Dash. you know, where they have dachshund races. Well, we went to a dachshund race thing at the city park, and I'll bet you there were 200 dachshunds of every color and size and hairstyle that you can imagine. More dachshunds than you'll ever want to see in your life. And what they did, they had a thing built with four boxes. Then you'd put your dogs in the box. And then on the other side, there is a lever that would pop all four gates open at the same time, and the dogs could then run to the other end of the field.
Yeah, like a full-blown greyhound race, but little tiny wiener dogs.
Exactly. And boy, you'd open that up, and some of them would just fly like a bullet across there, and some of them would lounge around. Unfortunately, our dog couldn't get the grasp of the concept, and they opened the gate, and it just sat there looking around. I had to literally walk over, pick it up, and carry it to the finish line because you were required to bring the dog out to the other side of the thing. You couldn't just leave him sit there, so I had to go get him. I was the only one that had to go fish him out of the box. But
well, now I know how Dad would feel picking me up at the end of basketball practice when I was in grade school.
All of his.
All right, son, let's go.
All of his kids. I told you about when I was giving my sad story about not being able to throw a baseball very far anymore, that the old man said, well, you were never any good at that.
I was at a park in St. Louis where it wasn't dachshund races. It wasn't races at all, but they had a corgi club, you know, those other little short dogs.
Yeah.
And they'd bring them all together, and they had, they made this like little fence, a little short fence, and they put their corgis in there, and they just went wild playing with each other. It's like they'd never seen another corgi. It was like the Munchkins in The Wizard of Oz. They went wild.
Oh, yeah, that movie, Somewhere Over the Rainbow or Under the Rainbow, I think was the name of that.
Yeah.
Chevy Chase. Yeah, this was like that, too. Yeah. The dachshunds are, you know, because there were some big dogs wandering around because it was a dog park, and the dachshunds would all shy away from them. But whenever they'd see one of their own, they knew one of their own when they saw them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the way these corgis were. It was just a pleasure to see that. They understood that they were with their own. That, you know, this was where they were meant to be, was at this corgi party.
Queen of England had corgis.
Yeah. Okay, here's my question is, when she died, did they bury them with her? Even though they weren't dead yet?
The first order of King Charles when he took over was have the corgis put down humanely.
Yeah. Did you say corgi or Camilla?
I married Camilla.
Oh, okay. I get some of those names mixed up.
Yeah, when you're...
Okay, are we ready to get to the crust of the biscuit here yet?
Indeed, the crust of the dog biscuit. What's your topic?
Okay, who are the three... If you could have any three people, living people, today, could interview on this podcast... Who would they be? And once you select them, they have to be on the show. They cannot say no.
Oh, okay.
Who would those three people be?
I got to think on that for a second. I think. Well, I'll give you one right off the snap. I would interview the Pope. I could get my money's worth out of the Pope, I think. Your turn.
Okay. I had the Pope on my list.
Too bad for you now. But here's your chance to jump ahead.
Okay. So now I'll pick. Okay, now I'll pick the next one.
All right.
And I had Paul McCartney on my list.
Okay, you know, I thought about Paul McCartney, too. But truthfully, if I was going to interview a Beatle, I'd interview Ringo. I think Ringo is a lot more interesting than Paul. I understand Paul McCartney wrote the songs that made the whole world sing and that he's a gajillionaire and all that. But it's not like you're bringing him on the show to get his money. You ain't getting his money. So I think Ringo would be the more interesting interview than Paul.
I don't want his money, but I just figured that Paul was kind of, you know, during their really drugged out days, he was kind of still pushing them to do stuff. So I figured he would probably remember, you know, a lot of the stuff better than him and how songs were, they came to be made, the decisions that were being made at the time, the places that they traveled in the world, the people they got to see. I mean,
Ringo was
these
with
guys
them.
Were rubbing elbows. Yeah, but he was just kind of along for the ride. You know, like he was always looking out the window, and they say, "Ringo, pay attention! Come on, Ringo! Huh? Oh, yeah."
If you had
just walking around with his camera like you, a ditz.
If you had to pump an interview out of someone, would you rather interview me or Larry Klunk?
If I had to interview a member of our band,
yeah.
Well, I'm going to interview Nate Postlewaite.
Nate? He doesn't even talk.
I'm just kidding. I think that Larry Klunk would have some interesting insights, you know, like from his football days and working in the Oklahoma oil fields for a while and being in the Marines and traveling around the world.
Okay, that's Ringo.
He's seen some weird stuff.
We need to get him.
I know, he's not an attorney. He's not a lawyer.
So the second of my people that I would interview is Larry Klunk. And he has to be...
I think that we could get him on the show.
Yeah, well, I think we really could. We need to do that. This has to happen before he slips off the tanteen.
Okay, you want to hear my third person?
Yeah.
Steve Martin.
Steve Martin would be pretty interesting. And he could play the banjo.
You know, he's a musician. He did stand-up comedy, which is hard. He's a movie star. And then he came back and did a TV series. He was a writer for The Tonight Show. It hosted Saturday Night Live numerous times. He's done everything. He can tap dance and juggle.
He did magic at Disneyland when he was like a teenager. He worked at the magic shop there and learned to do magic. How about that?
Okay, there you go. Yeah.
Okay, well, Steve...
I'm telling you, he's an interesting guy. He's funny.
Yeah, and he still is. I saw Steve Martin in concert. And do you know that, are you familiar with the Masterclass series that they'll get like some famous physicist and you can sign up for it and he'll teach you physics or at least the basics of it? Steve Martin, you can sign up and get a Masterclass on comedy and from Steve Martin.
Rick?
Yeah.
I taught him.
Yeah, there's that.
Okay, let me ask you this. What skill do you have that you could teach somebody in a master class? What could you pass along? What could you impart on somebody?
Wow, I have to narrow this down to one thing. I think I could give a class on how to be a Renaissance man. How you can master?
I don't think you could.
How you can master, you know, like 100 different things, you know, to where you're not going to be the world's greatest at it, but that you'd be pretty darn competent at art and science and history, and you know, I would give them tips on how to become a Renaissance man.
Okay, I think that I could conduct a master class on lying.
Alan, that's called law school.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying.
So it's been done.
Yeah, it has. My third person that I was going to interview, if I could interview anybody, right? But I was going to say Jesus, but he's pretty much not around. He hasn't come back yet. But if
right.
I could interview
him,
he's
living on Earth right now.
Okay. Well, that made it tougher. Oh, I'd probably interview Dad. I think Dad's got a lot of stories in him.
We could probably get him on the podcast now. I'm talking to people you couldn't get.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes it a little tougher, too.
Again, you're picking Dad and Larry Klunk.
Of all the humans.
And the Pope.
Of all the humans.
What'd be interesting is you had all three of them on the show, you know, waiting on a couch, like on The Tonight Show, and the Pope keeps interrupting. Hey, wait your turn.
Hey, Pope.
I just want to correct Mr. Klunk. He's lying. I know it.
Did you know the Pope, we had a list of the oldest people left alive. Pope was high on the list. Pope's in tough shape. They're getting ready to pick a new Pope, aren't they?
He's pretty rough right now, but I don't know that he's the oldest Pope we've ever had.
No, probably not. But it's always interesting when they pick a new Pope. That's high drama, you know.
Well, there's a lot of pomp and circumstance and rituals that the church hierarchy goes through. I do know that.
Yeah. My biggest memory of him choosing
a pope. I don't think they're going to pick you.
No, I know that. But they could. You don't have to be a priest. You can be a layman and still be a pope. St. Peter was married. Okay. In any event, what I was going to say is that my big memory of pope selection is that 1 year we had a pope die. And I want to say it was when we picked John Paul I. And we're all sitting around watching it at noontime. We've come in from picking fruit. And it's on TV that they're doing this. And we had a guy working for us who's going to go nameless. I'm going to call him Steve, okay?
And I remember the episode with Steve.
And
yeah.
Steve is sitting there watching TV with us, you know. And there's an announcer.
And Steve was a Catholic. He's a Catholic.
Steve was a Roman Catholic, the same as the rest of us. And we're sitting around watching him getting ready to pick the Pope. And they're showing St. Peter's Square, you know, with all the people in it. And there's these big columns all that form two semicircles around St. Peter's Square. And on top of them, you know, way up in the air is these giant statues of the 12 apostles, right? And the camera is showing that, and the announcer is saying, and here's statues of the 12 apostles. At which point, Steve kind of sits there for a while and says, are all the apostles dead? And there was that dead silence when we all kind of turned around to look at him, like, how long ago do you think Jesus lived? I don't know, 100 years?
Well, that's what I think we also then said, who do you think died first, Jesus or Abraham Lincoln? And he wasn't sure.
He had to go back and forth on that. So that was pretty interesting. Hey, you know what else is interesting? We're out of time.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
So, God bless you one and all.
Jesus.
See you later from Rick Gator.
And Alligator.
This has been the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour. The Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour is brought to you by Uncle Den's Roasters. Tastes just like chicken, but it's not. And by Cannoli's Canine Chalk Drops. If your dog is coughing, he's coughing for a cannoli. No portion of today's broadcast may be reproduced without the express written consent of the North American Alligator Wrestling Association. And with that little bit of legal business in hand, see you later from Rick Gator and Alligator. This has been the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Network production. Except no substitutes. You know, because there aren't any.